Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You hang up being there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out. He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Okay, I don't know what's going on with this board. Anyway, we got something queued up for you. Just, we're waiting for it to buffer. And maybe what I need to do is refresh my board, which I'll do now. All right, so today, we briefly mentioned it last week. Of course, you know, we have entity Abiding Faith Housing Ministries. Abiding Faith Housing Ministries, we're going to, that business will be, you know, doing stuff offline with people, including hopefully you, whoever you are right now. But we will also have a Boots on the Ground radio program that you can hear online, but it'll be localized for Boots on the Ground right here in a flagship station. So far will be right here in Florida. And that's titled Housing Ministries Radio. Housing Ministries Radio. So we'll have Boots on the Ground tours, building sessions, retreats. So matter of fact, if you don't know anything about building a house, and tiny houses are our thing. So we'll be teaching people woodworking, house building 101, off-grid house building. Let me narrow it down to that. Off-grid, off-the-grid houses. These are basically houses that are smaller. Many of you will consider these homes either tiny and or small. And we'll give our definition of that. And with no utility bills, no electric bill, no water bill, stuff like that. Still got to pay the yearly taxes, but, you know, hey, you're saving a bunch of money. So we're going to announce the station. We got a few more things to get through. But as soon as we clear that up, we'll announce the times and dates when you can listen online. And then whatever we can't cover, because the radio program will be, I mean, it, with radio, is, you know, we can't do, with podcasts, live streams, what you've been doing for the last 9.5 years, we can talk about anything, say anything, or whatever. Can't do that with radio. But that's okay. So we'll have fun with both of them, so to speak. Well, like I said, we'll be covering things, well, you know, reverse mortgages. You know, if you or one of your family members get stuck with one, what can you do? You know, behind on property, real estate property taxes, you know, strategies to get through that. You know, behind on child support, need extra income. So we'll be covering things like that with Housing Ministries Radio. And we'll be back in a few. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, here we go.
Man, what is what? All right, this is weird here. All right, let me refresh again. All right, well, I'm just thankful that we're on Blog Talk. Because last Monday, Blog Talk was down. Well, it was, what's the word? Not so much down. Going through maintenance upgrade. A lot of people do maintenance upgrades, you know, during off-peak hours, but Blog Talk's on 24/7. So last Monday, and then I guess they got revved back up sometime late Monday or Tuesday. And so glad Blog Talk's back on full swing. And let's see, I'm working with a laptop and smartphone this morning. And we gotta make some adjustments here because we're gonna be doing having a visual part of this as well. So let's see if we can get it right this time.
Hi, folks.
Okay.
In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land, okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now, I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively. And you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
People who live in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this because it remains the property of the client. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans, But being new to the industry, many solo retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We didn't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
So the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barbershops. We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. So when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to providing high-quality installations and good after-sales service. The Rural Energy Foundation helps them achieve this by training solar technicians.
We're trying to get the entrepreneurs to sign service contracts, so when they sell the product, it also comes with after-sales service. Let's say they have to check to make a phone call to the customer after a certain period to check if the system is working. And then till after some time through the service contract, they also have to go and actually do the inspection of the system.
The Rural Energy Foundation has trained over 200 retailers in 9 African countries. So far, they've sold 57,000 solar home systems and 36,000 solar lanterns. They've helped at least 400,000 people, saved nearly 5 million litres of kerosene and 12,000 tons of CO2 each year. Basil Okelo is impressed and has decided to buy the equipment from Moses to set up his own solar barbershop and phone charging business. He's taking advantage of a credit scheme which helps entrepreneurs buy equipment from Solar Now retailers to get their businesses going.
Solar Now is giving me a loan. I'm going to make a down payment of 25% now. Later, in 3 months' time, I'll make another 25%, making a total of 50%. Then the remaining I'll complete within a period of a year.
With his system now installed, Basil is optimistic about the future.
Because this is a new investment I'm going into. I have never been into this business before. But as I see, I have the expectation that I'll make money.
Moses is growing his solar retail business too. He already had a shop in town. With support from the Rural Energy Foundation, he's now set up a small village branch to cater specifically for his rural customers.
Rural Energy Foundation is very important to us. If they help us training technician, we shall be in position to expand all over.
We hope that others will also adopt the private sector development approach. We don't want to be unique. We want to spread the word that this is a really efficient approach to get the technology diffused deeply into the rural markets.
The Rural Energy Foundation plans to expand into other African countries and broaden its range of sustainable technologies. Solar panels are now becoming a common sight here on homes, and shops buy them as well to run radios and offer phone charging, increasing their income and enabling people to communicate. And to everyone's delight, the local bar has installed a fridge powered by the sun. The owner is pleased with his investment.
Yeah, we're happy. Of course, it's cold. The beer tastes better. And so I get more customers.
Thank you. The only two things in life that make it worth living is guitars tuned good and firm, feeling women. I don't need my name in the marquee lights. I got my song and I got you with me tonight. Maybe it's time we got back to the basics of love. Let's go to Lukenbach, Texas, Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs and Lou Barry's train songs and blue eyes crying in the rain. Out in Lukenbach, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain. So baby, let's sell your diamond ring, buy some boots and faded jeans and go away. This coat and tie is choking me, and in your high society you cry all day. Been so busy keeping up with the Joneses, four-car garage, and we're still building on. Maybe it's time we got back to the basics of love. Let's go to Lukenbach, Texas, Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs and Newberry's train songs and blue eyes crying in the rain. Out in Lukenbach, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain.
Let's go to Lukenbach, Texas, Willie and Waylon and boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and the McCoys. Between the Hank Williams pain songs and Jerry Jeff train songs and blue eyes crying in the rain. Out in Lukenbach, Texas, there ain't nobody feeling no pain.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008. Because my divorce was in 2005, and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died, and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, we have a problem. She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years, signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So
like
you could just see
$600,000 deducted.
Yeah, you're looking at
it. So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that...
I ended up owing $22 million.
Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here. Oh, man. He said, this woman found your taxes in... I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005, and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died, and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, we have a problem. She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I've signed and I've stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So like, you could just see $100,000, $600,000
deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here. Oh, man. He said, this woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. Mm-hmm. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, down. I said, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out to Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government, plus I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. Hmm. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back. So when people try to figure out how to make $1 million, they have no idea how daunting that is. Because if you know how to make $1 million, you're going to make it tomorrow. But since you can't figure out how to $1 million idea, you go somewhere and sit down. That's the wrong approach. If you apply your gift, your God-given gift that he gave you, you have millions already at your disposal. If you break it down inch by inch into things of sense for the 10-by-10 theory, which is very simple. You don't need $1 million idea. You need a $10 idea. You need something that you do, your gift that God gave you to make $10. That's all you got to be able to know. I don't care if it's cutting hair, cutting somebody's grass, washing somebody's car. I don't care if it's mowing somebody's lawn. I don't care if it's driving people to their destinations. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's baking cookies or pie. You have some braiding somebody's hair. You have something that you can do so well that someone will give you $10 for it. Write my paper for me. Do this for me. Somebody give you $10 for it. Once they give you $10, all you got to do is whatever you did to get that 10, do it 10 more times. You now, my friend, have $100. You have $100 simply because you took a $10 idea and you did it 10 times. Well, guess what? If you take that $100 that you made since you've done it 10 times and you do it 10 more times, I got news for you, my friend. You now have $1,000. $1,000, you make $1,000, guess what all you got to do? You got to multiply that effort again. Do whatever you did to do $1,000, do it 10 more times. My friend, you now have $10,000. You got $10,000 now. Imagine if you was making an extra $10,000 a month. Just imagine if you was making an extra $10,000 a month. That's $120,000 a year. But I got news for you, my friend. Whatever you did, whatever it took to make yourself $10,000, all you got to do is do it 10 more times. 10 more times, my friend, you now have $100,000. I got news for you now. If you can make $100,000, you're just a step away from being a millionaire, man. Because now you hire a few more people to help you out that you can do portions of what you do so you can duplicate that effort. And one more time, just one more time, do it 10 times. Man, that sounds hard. It is hard. But what else you got to do? What, you going to stop at the 100,000? All you got to do is duplicate your efforts by 10. You duplicate your efforts by 10 times 100,000. Welcome to the club, my friends. You are now a millionaire. Congratulations. You became a millionaire with a $10 idea. So stop bogging yourself down trying to figure out how to make a million. Do what you can do to make $10. And then do the 10-by-10 theory. Inch by inch, anything's a cinch. Now, here's the joyful part. Along the way, when you was down here making $20,000, but you did right here, and now all of a sudden you're making $30,000. Now you're making $100,000. But on the way to duplicating that times 10, you may stop along in here at $250,000. You could make it $250,000 a year. That's way better than that $20,000 you had when you started. So there's joy in the process. Your life is actually a lot richer at $250,000. It'll become even more richer at $500,000. It becomes even richer than that at $750,000. If you don't get to the million, man, you're going to trip because you're making $900,000 a year? No, you're going to be happy. But you don't make the million, so you're only making $700,000 a year? You can't find happiness in $7,000? Something wrong with you, man. There's joy in the process. That's how you make $1 million.
All right. As I stated earlier, well, today, based on today's live stream title, Housing Ministries Radio. So about, I don't know, months ago, Robin formed for us a ministry, not a church, not a nonprofit, but a business. Titled Abiding Faith Housing Ministries. So that's all legal now. She took care of all the legalities and got all that set up. Abiding Faith Housing Ministries. Now, we're going to have a radio program. Now, that radio program will be titled Housing Ministries Radio. And that'll be different from the podcast. Number one, it's coming from a terrestrial radio station. They have an online presence, but so you can listen online, but it'll originate from a terrestrial, you know, AM, FM radio station, which means we can't use colorful language up there. But we don't use it too much here, but we can't use it there at all. And then it'll be different from what we do here. Here we, you know, we throw out anything on here on It's My House or DIY Housing TV. But we're going to concentrate on boots on the ground in a local geographical area. And in this case, it's the local geographical area will be as a flagship station. Won't be the only station, but our jump-off station will be in Jacksonville, Florida. All right. And although the bulk of the work that we do up there offline will be outside of Jacksonville, okay, because Jacksonville is a grid, but that's the way we got to do it. That, you know, that's where the people are. So we'll meet the people there, and then educate them on, you know, rural areas where they can get ahead of the game. Now, that program, we got like three go-to strategies right out of the Bible, out of the Bible. And the first one is, and these three things we're going to throw out, because once again, it's, you know, going from Abiding Faith Housing Ministries or Housing Ministries Radio. You know, if you got, you know, you might be struggling with your rent, might be facing eviction, might be facing foreclosure, might be behind on child support, looking for extra income. We've got just a handful of strategies, really just from the Bible. And the primary one is based, it's like a sentence long, Isaiah 65:21, we shall build houses and live in them. Now, it's nothing new, thousands of years old, and the Amish and the Mennonite and the Hutterites, they use what we're talking about on a daily. So what we want to do is like we take Isaiah 65:21, we shall build houses. So instead of talking about it and getting pumped up and jacked up and motivated and psyched up,
No, all right, let's take that one thing, particularly if you know nothing about building anything. And we're going to take that and then actually have boots on the ground instruction, hands-on instruction on how to do, to apply Isaiah 65:21. All right. Another one, and then you can solve a myriad of problems with that. Another one will be 2 Kings 4:1-7. Now, this deals with a lady. She was a widow. Her husband passed away, and a couple of creditors came by and say, look, your husband owes this debt. If you can't settle it, if we can't resolve this with you, we're going to take your two sons and make them, you know, they're slaves. So they said, wait a minute, give me some time here. Let me work this out. Let me see what I can do to organize, you know. So what she and her two sons did, and they went back and formed a family business. And we'll get into all the details on the radio program. And then we'll break it down to, all right, now we're going to meet at this particular place, and here's what we're going to do in 2023, going into 2024, how to actually live, apply this principle right now in real time. And we'll document all this stuff too. All right. So through videos and, you know, but online, I mean, offline, hands-on classes. And then there's another one. Let me see. Let me go to my notes here. Okay. Ecclesiastes 11:2. If somebody in the radio audience can look that up, press 1 and read that to me. I already know what it is, but that's another one. That'll be a third go-to that we're going to look at. And let's see. Yeah, Ecclesiastes 11:2. Well, essentially it says, okay, point blank. Now, this was written thousands of years ago. You know, you need to have, and I'm paraphrasing for how I interpret it right here in 2023, going to 2024. You need 7 to 8 different sources of income coming in. Now, Ecclesiastes is over 2,000 years old, that particular scripture, Ecclesiastes 11:2. So that's back then. All right. You know, so if you're just operating off of 1 or 2 paychecks, or even 3, let's say you're a married couple or whatever, and you're a household couple, you know, the dude might be working 2 jobs, or the woman, because it goes both ways these days. So you got one partner working 2 jobs, and you got another worker, a partner working 3 jobs, and you guys are barely making ends meet. Why? Because you're short by at least, 4 paychecks, 4 to 5 paychecks. Ecclesiastes, like I said, the way I'm interpreting you, 619-768-21945, you see it differently than me. But you need 7 or 8 paychecks minimum. Minimum coming in, you know, to not only make ends meet, but to prosper. Or to start to prosper. All right. So those 3 things. And they're all, the way we're going to do it is going to be all, interwoven. Now, with the boots on the ground thing, and here's the exciting part about it, they're going to be people that we don't know yet. They're friends that are coming out of that Jacksonville listening audience and their online market. And there's a local newspaper there too, so they got a pretty nice offline community, boots on the ground community, as I would like to call it. So we're going to get ideas from them and strategies from them to solve some of these problems. Because a lot of people, and this is a religious station we'll be on, they're listening to these inspirational stations because they're not all, but, they don't know how they're going to make the rent. They don't know how they're going to catch up on the mortgage payment. They don't know how they're going to catch up on the, the utility bills. The water got shut off, maybe the electric got cut off. Matter of fact, this morning when I was about to go out and run errands, I saw the electric company making its rounds to cut people off Monday morning. I'm glad I got mine paid off, before it was even due. But we'll get into solar energy, alternative energy, renewable energy, how you can generate your own energy using earth wealth, and solar energy is earth wealth. So we'll be, we're approaching things, we know people are going to Pastor, can you help me with this? Pastor, the lights off, the water's off. I'm behind on this. And some churches or some faith-based organizations, they set aside money where they might be able to help you out once a year. Now, take your pick. They might be able to help you across the board, but take your pick. Are you behind on your rent? Well, you can have up to this amount. Might not be able to get the whole amount, but up to a certain amount. Not all churches do it, but some do. All right? Others, they might be able to help you a little bit with your electric bill or water bill, all right? Many have food pantries, all right? But we're attacking it from, once again, going to Isaiah 65:21, is build houses and live in them. So if you don't know nothing about building houses, okay, and we're not talking about mansions, okay, we're talking about tiny, this small house where you get the fundamentals hands-on, where you can actually live in it, or somebody can live in it, and rent out. If you build two, live in one and rent out the other one. Well, build two, live in one and rent out the other one. Or let's say there's an overlap here with Ecclesiastes 11:2, build one and live in it. That's Isaiah 65:21, and combine that with Ecclesiastes 11:2. So you're going to, in addition to the first one that you built, you're going to build seven or eight more for passive income. And then if you have children, build seven or eight more with the assistance of those kids, for each and every child that you have. You shouldn't have no child support payment, problems after that. So those, once again, the three, there'll be other, but the three that we're basically hanging our nail on, okay, Isaiah 65:21, 2 Kings 4:1-7, and Ecclesiastes 11:2. Those are the three main ones that they overlap that will with Abiding Faith Housing Ministries. How to actually apply those three, what does that look like, and the many ways it can look like, boots on the ground. All right, so Jacksonville is a boots on the ground radio market that we'll have. But we're lining up, but we'll have a total of 10 when everything is said and done. Jacksonville's the first one. All right, so. And like I said, you'll be able to listen online, call in, all that other stuff. Now, due to the fact like it'll be an hour-long live broadcast, so we're not going to get into any talks on reparations and nothing like that for that particular program. We'll save that right for here on, online, where we have more leeway to do stuff, but we're not doing anything, no talks of reparations on well, you know what? That would be, you know, we might have something on that. Because I can go Old Testament on that one. Just see what people say. But the thing is, it'll be, the radio program is, okay, you got a problem. All right, how can we solve that problem in real time based on one of those three scriptures? Isaiah 65:21, 2 Kings 4:1-7, or Ecclesiastes 11:2. All right. And actually, let me throw in another one that just pops off my head, because these things overlap. We go to David and Goliath, that story. All right. Or blueprint. Let's call it a blueprint. All right, so you're facing a mountain of debt like Steve Harvey. You know, I mean, $22 million, man. $650,000 a month as a payment plan. You know, some people don't even earn that in 10 years of working. So we'll get into reverse engineering, how to reverse engineer a debt. Think on paper. You know, you break it down. And I brought up David and Goliath. I call that a blueprint because the blueprint, well, and this is my interpretation. I'm not a pastor, minister. I'm not an evangelist. I'm none of that. But the way I see it is he had five stones. Now, the five stones, the way I see it, are five strategies. He had five strategies to defeat that giant. All right. So we're going to break that down. You know, my five strategies might be different from your five strategies. But if you got five strategies, because some people have difficulty coming up with one. No, if you got five strategies, you can think more clearly. And maybe, like, with you know, with, what's his name, David, in your life, his first strategy worked. But just in case it didn't work, he had four more backup strategies. So there you go. I just named those are five things we'll be working on, you know, how to, and building a house is a strategy. Now, because today's Monday. Let's say you need 500 to 1,000 bucks by Friday. Well, a strategy could be, all right, based on your budget or whatever, is, you know what, I don't have enough money to build a house, even a tiny house to live in, by the end of the week. However, I do have enough money where I can build a doghouse today. Or if I start today, I'll finish by tomorrow. And then after it's complete, then that's the strategy. And then part two to that strategy is put it up on eBay, put it up on Facebook Marketplace, put it up on Etsy, and sell it. And then you'll have, or now you might have to do that two or three times, but by Friday, you'll have the extra $500 or $1,000 that you need. So we'll be doing stuff like that, taking a scripture, applying it to a modern-day, in real-time problem that you probably have a deadline on you, and then, you know, just, I know there's a, what's another scripture? I think Judges 33:1 or 3:13. I got to look that up. But the essence of it is this, because this guy took a very limited resource to defeat whoever he was defeating. And we're all going to start with this. Yeah. If it appears that you don't have everything that you need to meet a particular problem, just start where you are. No, you're not in New York City. Okay. No, you're not in Chicago. No, you're not in London. Wherever you are, whatever problem that you have, start where you are and use what you have. No matter how insignificant it might look. So all of us here, we got a computer, we got an internet connection, and we're on smartphones, tablets, whatever listening device. That's all we have. And as long as we're living and breathing, we got some time, because time's an asset too. So we're gonna, I can see some mountains major being moved, some miracles being, or what people interpret as miracles being performed. All dealing with housing, and including personal problems, child support getting caught back up on, lights being cut back on, water being shut back on, or if you just want to stop paying utilities altogether, how to get off the grid using renewable energy. So, things of that nature. And I'm sure in some cases, some people, they'll be getting their 40 acres. You'll be getting your 40 acres right now and here and now. Not everybody, but I'm sure there's some people that'll be getting their 40 acres. Not from the government, okay, through private enterprise. Because if you look at, and this is why one of the reasons why we're running on one of these faith-based stations, is going back to the Amish and the Mennonite, they're enterprises. They set up their communities based on enterprise. Even their interpersonal or family relationships, people getting married, dating in the Amish or the Mennonite, and I'm not saying you need to be Amish or Mennonite, because you don't, but, their enterprise and relationships. A large part of the Patel family, which owns anywhere from 40 to 60%, I think, about motels in the United States. Fascinating story. And we might do I think tomorrow we'll do our podcast on them. It started with one guy coming over from India, and they've been discriminated against as well. But now they own 40 to 60%. I'm going to just put it at 40%. I'm going to go lowball. They own 40% of the motel hospitality niche market in the entire United States. Man, that's tomorrow's podcast. The enterprises. Now, on the African-American side, with Sweet Daddy Grace, we're going to go through those histories too. Because this is something you can do on an individual basis or family basis. Because when you got a family mindset, it's you got a wolf pack that you're forming instead of being a solo person, a lone wolf. But, Sweet Daddy Grace, he's got maybe about 40, 44. I think he started the United House of Prayer for All People. But in each one of those, or most of them at least, they have their enterprise is they sell soul food dinners. And I'm sure a part of their customer base don't even attend that church. But what's today, Monday? I'm sure people, it was 11:40 where I'm at, 11:40 a.m. I'm sure some people they picked up their lunch or they're on the way to picking up their lunch, either pick it up and take it out or sit down and eat it or getting a couple you know, and take home for dinner. But that's the enterprising ministry within the United House of Prayer for all people. They're not the only ones to do it, but I'm just saying. That's something that black folks got together in that particular denomination, and they're doing very well with that. You know, the Amish and the Mennonite and the Hutterites, they do their thing with farmland and farmers markets and things of that nature. So that'll all blend into Housing Ministries Radio. Okay. All right, let me, if you guys want to throw any trending topics, please do. That's about all my rant is for today. Because tomorrow we're going to get into the Patel family and how they started and these are people, not all of them can even speak English, but they own 40-60% of the motel market here in the United States. So, Robin, are you there? Okay, she's kicking around somewhere. Matter of fact, you know what? Tomorrow we're gonna do that. I'm gonna get some audio for you on that. But I tell you what, I'm gonna drop some clues in here today, so don't go nowhere. I'm on my rant part two for today.
We want them to be themselves, and I told them, be yourselves. And say what you want to say. Don't worry about me. And I'm going to do the right thing, whatever it is. I may be right. And they may be right. But I said, be yourselves. Wouldn't you say something? Let them do it. I could have said, do this, say that. I don't want that. I want them all to be themselves.
Okay, and on repeal.
Everybody okay?
Yes, sir.
Everybody
on repeal
good?
And replace.
Thank you. Thank you. Say hello to Harvey. Repeal and replace
sir,
is going great.
Sir. Mr. Trump.
Well, that was Mr. Trump with Steve Harvey, the popular television personality, game show host, talk show host as well. That's a nice shot of his tie right there.
We recently had Robert Frank on the show to discuss different things.
Different things,
yeah.
Let's listen to Steve, shall we?
Both transition team, Obama's transition team and Trump's transition team, and it was really a really cool meeting in the beginning. We talked a lot about golf and things like that, and people we knew and people in common, and then we got down to the crux of it. He's introduced me to Ben Carson, who's now the new head of housing for urban development, and we're gonna team up and see if we can bring about some positive change in the inner city.
Okay, just real quick on the Patel family and as an upgrade from that, we need to get into the Gujaratis ethnic group out of Southern Asia. So all right, Gujarati. Okay. All right. All right. Let's start with this. Where are we at? Okay, here we go. All right. What percentage of hotels, and we may as well say motels as well, are owned by the Patels, P-A-T-E-L-S, because it's a big family, or family name, all right. 70% of the hotels/motels in the United States, and that's probably more motels than hotels, are owned by the Patels. 7%, 7-0. All right. According to a report by the Asian American Hotel
Owners Association, all right, Indian Americans own more than 40% of all hotels and motels in the United States, which includes approximately 20,000 properties. Out of that, 70% of them are owned by Gujaratis, and most of them have the surname of Patel, P-A-T-E-L, or Amin, A-M-I-N. All right? Now, because they mentioned something very important, Gujarati. All right, and that's spelled G-U-J-A-R-A-T-I. Once again, Gujarati, G-U-J-A-R-A-T-I, Gujarati. Gujarati is an Indo-Aryan language native to the Indian state of Gujarat and spoken predominantly by the Gujarati people. Gujarati is descended from an old Gujarati. In India, it is one of the 22 scheduled languages of India. There are 56 native Gujarati speakers on the planet. Now, they came over. One of them came over and bought one motel in California. I keep on telling you guys, everything starts with one. They bought one motel, one person bought one motel, and then they bought another one. Now, in the process, they hired their own to do housekeeping, you know, changing the beds, cleaning the rooms, or whatever. If you didn't know anything about housekeeping, you learned it on the job. If you didn't know anything about plumbing, electrical, you learned it on the job. They saved money because they didn't go when they got a job. They got a business that created jobs for the family, and they didn't need to go out and get a pay rent or a mortgage because at least two or three generations of the family, they would live on. So they had a family, and the family members, they learned the front desk, they learned the hospitality business. You know, if they have meeting space available, they learn that part of the business. Electrical, plumbing, carpentry. Instead of getting in the yellow pages, they learned it. And then, I'll give an example. When I go out to Taft, Oklahoma, now, you know, Taft's a black township. You know, I usually stay at a Motel 6. But one year I went, you know, and I had to leave the Motel 6 because it was booked I was there for Memorial Day. That's what it was. It was already pre-booked. So, you know, and I got there like a week ahead of time. So I walked across the street or the highway, and just every motel for at least a mile was owned, and probably where I stayed at that Motel 6 was probably owned by a Patel or a main family as well, a Gujarati. Okay. And I walked to, you know, they're sold out, Finally, when I got to the third or fourth one, they had a room for me. Okay. But I didn't realize, I mean, you know what, let's look at, all right, number of Gujaratis in USA. See, this is another why we're doing boots on the ground. All right, now in North America, in North America. This is the United States. All right, in North America, that's Canada, United States, and Mexico. Three countries. There are 940,000 Gujaratis in North America. To break that down, 848,093 Gujaratis live in the United States. All right. Now let's take another step here, because I'm gonna step on some toes on this, but I don't care. All right, number of African Americans in the USA. Oh, African Americans, excuse me. I got to put in Americans. Just for those who want to know, there are 2.1 African, over 2 million Africans in the United States. So I got to be specific here. African American. Okay, in the United States, there are 41,600,000 African Americans. Okay. Now let's look at one more thing. Number of population of Canada. Okay. Canada, the entire nation of Canada has 38,250,000 people. That's everybody. Black, white, you name it, yellow, blue, black, brown. 38 million people in Canada, the whole nation. Now in the United States, there are 41,600,000 black folks. So, no, that's African American. If you add on, I'm not including the 2 million plus Africans that live, you know, that are in the States as well. Okay, now let's do some arithmetic here. Okay, there are 40, I'm rounding things down. 41 million black folk or African Americans in the United States. Once again, I'm not including the 2 million plus Africans that are in the United States. But 41 million African Americans in the United States. The population of Canada is 38 million. We're going to round that down just to 38 million. So, give or take, there are at least 3 million more African Americans on the North American continent. Well, I'm just taking North, I'm not even including Mexico. There are 3 million more black folk or African Americans in the United States than the entire population of Canada. Now, the third number that we're going to, Amin, A-M-I-N, and the Patel families, which are of the ethnic group Gujaratis from India, have approximately, well, between the hotels and motels, 40 to 70% of the business, But motels probably 70%. You draw your own conclusions. But that's why we have to do something boots on the ground. To just do our little microscopic part in solving problems, using those basic simples. Man, I don't even go to church. But scriptures, you can hang your nail on them. You don't even have to believe in God. It's real practical. Build houses and live in them. You don't have to believe in God for that. Just build a house and live in it. And then if you go into Ecclesiastes 11:2, okay, you need to increase your cash flow. Just keep on build 7 to 8 houses. If you don't have enough, build another 7 to 8 houses. Don't have enough, build. Keep on building. You can be atheists. You just put it to work that way. All right. So, okay, I got to find my, well, here it is. So, let's see. Robin, are you there?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm here, L.A.
Okay, well, I've done my rant for today. Anything you want to throw in?
No, there's someone else on the line with us, a 773. Do you have something to say today?
They need to punch one because I don't see them on the board.
No, they're on the line with me here at Freak in the Backyard.
Oh.
Area code 773-368. If you have something to say, feel free to go ahead.
Good morning. I didn't know who I was connected with. L.A. gave me this number last week, I believe, and it's a free number. That's why I went this route. Good to hear, Robin. Just a comment on what L.A. said. The Bible doesn't just teach this in book and verses, but it's a whole pattern of the Old Testament he and I have been talking about today. I'll be sharing some stories, other example on what he's saying later as we go on with this ministry. Thank you, ma'am.
And good to hear from Delmar. Yeah, Delmar can really break all this stuff down. That's his lane. It's not mine. It's his lane. But man, we're glad to have him back. And plus, now, Delmar, when are you starting back up on Blog Talk? You know that yet?
Probably next month.
Okay,
September. Yeah.
All right, that's coming up soon. All right, well, good that you're coming back. And now, you've got some programs already on Blog Talk. So now, if a person wants to go into the archives on Blog Talk, what's the name of the your podcast there?
Now, see, now you're messing with my brain now. After this
show,
I'm kind of still off on a lot of stuff. If I'm looking at it, I read it right now, I just don't recall how to get there. We'll share it later.
All right. I'll look it up for tomorrow and get it. But, keep on recovering because, like I said, your speech sounds basically normal to me. So, all right. Well, on that note, that's all I've got for today. It's 1 minute after 12. So,
I want to have everyone remind everyone to go to hopeformaui.org. That's HOPE. The number 4, Maui.org. So you can see the live streams that we have coming on from live from Maui. There's a benefit concert going on, and there's going to be more and more videos from the people. And then please hit that donate button and make donations so that we can help with the relief over there. So we are, I Am Streaming is, has the exclusive broadcasting over there for the relief efforts and the benefit concert being brought on, put on by Hope for Maui. Okay. Sure. Shout out to Chris Collins, who donated his channel, Hope Housing Our People Everywhere, for the good people in Maui to utilize during this time. And again, shout out to I Am Streaming, who's bringing us all of this wonderful content, radio, television, and podcast. Have a nice day.
Thank you. Oh, you know what? Before we go, I want to, the reason why I threw out the numbers, okay, in the United States, you've got over 41 million African Americans. All right, I'm not including Africans because there's over 2 million Africans in the United States, but there are over 41 million African Americans. That's over 3 million people than the entire population of Canada, which is a little bit over 38 million people. All right, and then you've got the Patel and Amin families. Between those two families, which they're out of the Gujarati ethnic group out of India, they own and control over 20,000 properties. We're talking about hotels and motels here in the United States. I want to know, and they control 40 to 70% of the market. What do people, if you feel anything, What do you guys think about that? Now, there's one ethnic group, which there are, how many people? There's not that many of them. There are 940,000 Gujaratis in North America. In the United States, there are 848,093. Now, and there are 41 million African Americans in the United States. So how is it that African Americans how come we don't own 70% of the motel or hotel market, but they don't even have 1 million people in this country, but they control 40 to 70% of the market? So I'm just throwing it's a question how you guys feel about that. If you have any feelings at all, about that. 619-768-2945. That's the number to call if you have any comment on that. You know, we could say, what's wrong with that picture? Because you do have African Americans that they spend money at hotels and motels, because, like I say, when I go to Taft, Oklahoma, which is a historic black township, there are no accommodations in Taft. So I have to stay in Muskogee. It's 15 to 20 minutes away. But, every motel that I stepped in Muskogee, Oklahoma, was owned by a Gujarati family, somebody from India. Last name Patel A-M-I-N. So I've been to Taft, Oklahoma. I've been to Summit, Oklahoma. I've been to Tallahassee, Oklahoma. I didn't see any hotel. And here's the crazy thing, that, with holidays coming,
they can't stay in Tampa or these other cities I named. They had to, Muskogee, you know, is 15, 20 minutes away, so I'm just wondering why. Because once again, you don't even have a million Garadis in the United States. Yet they've got 20,000 motels. So is there, I mean, anybody have any logical, sensible reason why that is? Or Well, you know, tomorrow we're going to go more into details on how they did it. And because it started with one person. It started with one person in the 40s that bought one motel. Because as much as we marched, as much as we have protested, as much as we have rented motels and hotels, Martin Luther King got assassinated at a motel. I'm going to look up, find out who owns it. How come we don't have a significant market share in the hospitality business? I'm just wondering. Well, the phones obviously are not ringing off the hook today, so maybe tomorrow we're going to cover this in its entirety. Maybe we'll get some comments then. Because one of the things that we're going to cover in Housing Ministries Radio is, and here too, is, and basically Delmar coined this, Delmar America. I'm giving credit to him because he coined it, not me, is we need to become enterprising. More enterprising. We got some of us that are enterprising already. We need to become more enterprising. Point blank. Point blank. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.